And what is this? It is the Lean Into Artcast, the show where a couple of visual storytellers get together and take a walk around a potentially dangerous topic. How do we navigate these dangers? Well, we've got a system, and it's never failed us yet. We usually start out with a curveball, warm ourselves up intellectually. Then we take on the main topic, 1,000 feet up, talk about it, discuss it in the abstract. And then we zoom down to the ground to provide, you know, put all these abstract thoughts to use with stupid healthy tips and other kinds of useful nuggets, thinking strategies to set you off using the stuff that we've spent time thinking and chewing upon. I'm Jersey Drozd, cartoonist and teaching artist. That other guy is...
I'm Rob Stenzinger, and I just hang out with Jersey. How's it going, everybody?
That's all you do.
Yeah. Via Google Plus, this wonderful, awesome technology. Like, we're, you know, living the future today.
It is an amazing technology.
It really is. When it works.
To be fair, when it works, it's awesome.
Yeah, so crazy awesome.
But yeah, we had some trouble getting started today, but we won't spend any time grumbling or grousing about that because we've got to talk about curveball.
We do.
And I've got one for you, which you've been kind of pre-prepped for, but we'll put that aside for a second.
It's a little bit emergent. I mean, it's one of those things where we walked into a room and we kicked over a box and all of a sudden it was like, there's a curveball. Back up, everybody. Back up. Don't touch it. You know, and I was a gentleman.
That's true. That's almost exactly how it happened. Yeah. So you took some time off.
I did. I am.
You took some time off to live, mm-hmm. right? And I'll tell you, I have been victim of this many times, as I'm sure many listeners, leaners, have been victim of this before, is that you set up, I'm going to take a week off from day job, responsibilities, all that life stuff, right? I'm going to just stay home, and I'm going to focus on stuff for me, stuff to please me, whether that is, you know, reading all of John Steinbeck's novels and eating chocolate bars, or whether that's beating Metroid Other M, or Metroid Prime Other M, I forget the name of that one, but picking some kind of thing that's like to nourish you. But me, what I usually do is I go, oh, I'm going to finish 75 pages worth of artwork. I take a week off, and I know I can do it, because it's Monday. I got a whole week. Wednesday rolls around. I've got a couple pencil sketches. And then the despair kicks in. Oh, you're a failure after all. You didn't do it, right? And now I got to hurry up. Oh, now I'm doing half-hearted work because I'm trying to hurry up, and I've put a kibosh on this whole relaxing week, turned it into a nightmare. What'd you do? What'd you do with your time off?
Well, I think you summarized it pretty good. That's about it. No, I've often had sort of I call them creative retreat vacations, and I enjoy that a lot when I can. It depends on the nature of the logistics of the vacation, right? So right now I'm off work, but other folks in my household are having their normal day-to-day flows. So I essentially have a vacation-like chunk of time during the normal workday. And so that's different. But like, so for instance, this example of the, creative retreat is what I used to call it. I would essentially just go to a hotel, typically with friends working on the same creative project. And, you know, if you live in a metropolitan area and then you go out a little ways, typically hotels get kind of cheap. Right. Depends on the time of year and whatnot. And that isolation versus paying some money. Cause yeah, I mean, you have a bed and whatnot at home, convenient food and all that stuff. But like, I found it really helpful to go just to go isolate, to get out of the routine and, get immersed in making stuff. And overall, it's varied by project. Some creative retreats, all of them, I've had a lot of production, a lot of output. All the projects that I would, you know, use that output toward weren't always successful. But I have that routine down. Like I'm familiar with what that's like. And I would go back and forth between indulging, where I would, you know, basically play video games, exercise, eat, and work. for a chunk of days and not care what time it is. But I'm not in that situation right now. And maybe that's why I decided to not plan for a giant output result for this time off. I was looking more for a set of experiences and to shift perspective, get into a different routine, but do that within a context that's more like my normal day to day, just without needing to go to a day job for a while. And that, because so part of with your curveball, I think you set up. What's funny, I played chicken with it, your curveball, honestly. Like when I was planning on taking this time off, I thought, okay, I have two creative projects that I haven't put much time toward in a while. I'm going to do something about that. But I didn't overly describe what I was going to do to myself, you know, and say, oh, I'm going to finish this one and make a dent on that one or get 50% done on each or whatever. I just said, I'm going to put myself in a room with that project for a while in this time. And where I think I avoided one of the huge risks or based on the premise of your curveball, I think, is the really having an expected, just an assumed result, a specific outcome. Mm-hmm. And especially having that, that specific outcome being, well, oh yeah, I'm going to get super duper far with those things. In a way that's just so different than my normal day to day, where I will have magical bursts of productivity and creativity that, you know, because I don't have the other things to worry about. And I think this feels like really, you know, work habit territory kinds of things where I think if you're used to producing things like that, then you're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew I wasn't, and I just didn't want to set myself up to fail like that. So I wanted to take a longer term view to say, well, let's see what this is like to get reacclimated to these two creative projects and figure out some strategies that will work for me, even when I'm not in a taking a week off situation.
Some language you use in there that I want to grab onto and maybe buff out a little bit is you said, because like it'd be easy for me to come at this and go like, well, you got to set reasonable goals, which, wow, that is exceedingly useful. Reasonable goals. What the heck does that even mean?
Be reasonable, man.
Could you make this drawing 10% happier, right? It's mm-hmm. like that useful of an instruction. But what you did talk about is you talked about habit. So what it sounded like I'm hearing there, correct me if I'm wrong, is if you're in the habit of doing things all the time, regardless of your workload, then you'll be fine. But it's the fallacy of I've got X amount of time taken, you know, given to me. Now I'm going to be able to fit in that much more than I typically do, right?
Exactly. And yeah, I mean, if you're prepared for that, that could work out well.
So habit is more important than time. Mm-hmm. At least that's what I'm inferring from this.
I think so, because what else do you have? So time works in two different ways when you look at the creative projects and habits. So you have you could have a an event, or you know, sort of a session versus a series of many sessions, and you know, over a series of many sessions, you could weather out good sessions and sessions where you had technical difficulties, or sessions where, you know, maybe something just doesn't go as expected. You can turn that into something to improve your next session. But if you're trying to get it all done, in one golden subset. I mean, so yeah, this week isn't just one big session. I have been sleeping and all that stuff, right? But like, but it's like a golden set of sessions where it's like, oh, this is the magic time. And really, there's many sessions before this and many sessions after that. So I just want to get better when I sit down to work on these projects.
I know we've gone over our time for Curveball, but I want to touch on something that you threw in there that I think is really cool. Is it reminded me of something that I used to romanticize about. You really did lock yourself up in hotels with people for creative retreats, huh?
Yeah, I did. And aspects of it were really awesome. I mean, so it depends on the personalities. It was Jin Hanu. And it was, friends like, for a while, there was an era of the Jin Hanu game project where Javen Ackerman, he's the comic artist behind The Winchcomb and Q Burger, where he was the writer on it for a while. And my creative, coding and game design partner, Todd Slater. We just got along, you know, it was easy.
Well, that helps, obviously. But yeah, I love this. Like, I remember talking about this years ago on the Art and Story podcast. I can't remember who it was or what book it was. And so, and I might even be making it up for all I know anymore, because this is what happens when you remember just the general aspects of a story, but lose the details of it.
It's the apocryphal child of fuzzy memories and bajillions of podcasts.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, yes. That and this stuff, right? All that gray hair. But there was supposedly some cartoonist was told on a Friday night by his publisher. This is like in the monthly comic book days, traditional newsstand comic books. He's like, Friday night, oh, guess what? We need a 60-page story done Monday morning. And he's like, how am I going to possibly? There's no way it can't be done. And so he grabbed like all his cartoonist friends that he could find, and they locked themselves up in a hotel room over the weekend, and they got the 60-page book done. Or maybe it was more than that. I don't remember. But it was like a larger than normal sized book. And I just love the romance of this idea of a bunch of cartoonists just feverishly just doing whatever they could to get the book done and pumping out something, you know, massive, right? Not doing an 8-page mini comic over a weekend, but like a big book.
I think that's brilliant. I think it's doable. I think at some point, maybe that's something. If you're interested in planning that kind of thing, I think we could make that kind of thing happen. It's very doable. It's tough. I mean, it depends on everyone's personalities and all that kind of stuff. I mean, some people.
It totally does. Like, how do you negotiate the story? Because this is different than a 24-hour comic, right?
What I love about what you're talking about is like, the retreat itself has a unit of work wrapping it as a wrapper around it. And it's not a series of sessions in a longer set of sessions. It is the beginning and end of a project.
Yeah.
For the most part, there's probably a lot of preparation that would help make it go well.
And then, you know, what would also make it really cool is if it was live streamed. I remember talking about this years ago. Like, you live stream the whole thing, watch everybody crack up.
It wouldn't be that hard to do nowadays, honestly.
No, it wouldn't.
Yeah.
It really wouldn't.
Huh.
Like, okay. you live cast the entire thing and watch everybody go into it all like, we can do it! And then watch, like, day two, everybody's like, oh, no, this is never going to happen. Day three, the fight breaks out, right? Somebody argues somebody else, like, no, it's a dog. No, it should be a pony.
Yeah, it's funny. I wonder, because I remember the days before we streamed stuff, right? And it due to its expense or in difficulty or whatever, because that kind of thing can be distracting if you're just really enjoying what you're doing and you're building you're building something, right?
Yeah.
It'd be cool to have someone there documenting.
Yeah.
As their separate role or whatnot. But, it can be just really satisfying to just, work on something and then, you know, whatever, go out, play basketball or whatever and keep doing it.
Well, and I think, that would be part of the documentary that I think is actually interesting, but, we can save that for another time because we got to get to topic because we got a lot of material to talk about today. So with that, perhaps I should kick into the bridge music. Unless you had something else that you want. Oh, you did.
Oh, I don't remember. But I was wondering if I get to the crux of that curveball. Is that the
yeah.
okay? Because I just want to make sure.
The big takeaway there was that forming a habit is like your best defense against time. I think that's pretty good. Cool. Another one to add to the Rob Stenzinger coat of arms. I just want to throw out real quick before we kick into the main topic, front end this one instead of putting it on the back end, is that we do another show. Like, we went to a biweekly schedule, but we do shows in between, and the show is called Extra Lean. It's an extra show, and it's shorter, so it's leaner than the regular. Get it? it's a special show that's only available if you sign up for our mailing list. You sign up for the mailing list by going to leanintoart.com. There is a newsletter icon right there on the main page. You can't miss it. It's red. Red catches your attention. It's got a little envelope on it. Click that. Sign up for the mailing list. Then we send out newsletters with resources and things that we've been posting to all of our different social things. And then we also include a link to the Extra Leans. Sometimes I think they are really, really good discussions.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, so the Extra Lean is essentially where our takeaway segment from this podcast went.
Yep. Reflecting on our week and putting it together into some kind of useful essay. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the essay is formed on the fly, but usually I'm really happy with the way the essay comes together. So anyway, I wanted to throw that out. You know, join the mailing list. We're not spamming you. We just put out like one of those things a month or so, and then usually it contains the links, or it always contains the links to the Extra Leans that we've been doing. So with that, Rob, I think it's time to kick over into main topic and triumphantly march to the main topic of today. Okay, episode 75, we did a talk on walking tall or lying low. We did talk, discussion. We walked around the topic of whether you should hang on to the stuff and keep it under wraps or dole it out piece by piece as you're developing it. What are the pros and cons of those things? What I really loved about that episode was the way we approached the question. We didn't just say, like, well, here's your bullet pointed list. Here's the way to do it. This is the recipe for success, my friend, and go forth and conquer. We said, well, let's look at the question carefully and, you know, look at it from a whole bunch of different angles, and hopefully by doing that, we've given you the tools or helped you, provide you with another point of view to be able to answer that question for yourself. So what the topic's been on my mind a lot, this doesn't come from a listener, this came from just my general observation, is convention season is going on. And I'm preparing for a convention of my own, the Kids Read Comics Convention, of which I'm one of the four co-founders, and now there is like a team of, I would say, probably 12 people involved in putting this thing together now. The team's growing. And then a friend of mine recently went to a convention for the first time in several years, and he's not a cartoonist. He went as an attendee. And it was interesting to hear his reactions going to a convention after so many years. So, okay, so you and I have both tabled, Rob. We've both gone to conventions. I organize a convention. We got observations from my friend. And I think we can come at this topic again afresh. Should I or should I not go to conventions? Not, oh, you must go to conventions because after all, that's the way to get the word out about yourself and meet your fans and et cetera, et cetera. Maybe. Maybe not. Let's look at both sides of this thing. Let's deconstruct that question. Should I or should I not do it? Did you have any opening remarks on that topic, Rob?
No, I think you framed it up really well. Where anyone who is making a creative thing, and you have these different possible conventions that you can go to. A lot of what we're talking about are comics related conventions or publishing or indie creator kind of conventions. But I think it applies to like conventions in general for whatever your different creative pursuit.
Art fairs, craft fairs.
Yeah, exactly. All of those. Yeah. All of those apply because there's a lot to decide as far as all the logistics surrounding it. And I think there's a lot of interesting perspective on both sides where it can get, you can easily get swept up in all the excitement and have assumptions drive some of what how you look at these big events. But
okay, yeah, let's stipulate one thing before we progress any further. Can we agree to stipulate that, I think we've said this before on the show, if you make things, if you are engaged in some kind of creative pursuit, odds are you want other people to interact with that thing somehow.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Totally.
Okay. So when I say whether or not to convention, it's not to say like, well, just lock yourself up, kid, and don't talk to anybody. There's other ways.
Sure. Pile it all up. So when you, but leave a clear note so people know where to find it when you kick off.
Leave it where people can find it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, going back to something you talked about when you're talking about operating out of a sense of assumptions, is that this is a difficult question to manage because, and I'm talking from my own personal experience, is that this is kind of wrapped up and tangled in this like this sort of unfocused desire of, well, why do you want to go? Why do you want a convention? I want to meet my fans. I want to make new fans. I want to make money. I want to meet people in my field. Okay. Then let's go to some conventions. All right, I'm gonna go to this convention. Oh, I had a terrible time. Why'd you have a terrible time? Well, I was in the way back end of the hall. Nobody came by my table. Those who did were interested in my stuff. Somebody was mean to me. I didn't get to meet anybody at this show. Or you go to another show and you have a really great time. And oh, what was so great about it? Oh, well, we had all these after parties. I got to talk to all these people who I respect and admire. They treated me with respect. I sold a lot at my table. Had some people come up and say some really nice things to me. Then the question is let's look at the rationale and reasoning behind it. Let's see if we can put a name to some of these things to help us make some better choices rather than – because here's the other thing I want to throw out at the top, and I've talked about this repeatedly in many places. It is expensive to go to these things. If you go to one out of town, you're going to spend anywhere from $1,000 to $2,000. Audra Furuichi of Nemu Nemu, nemu-nemu.com, just posted a report on her experience at the Toronto Comics Arts Festival where she had a terrific time. $2,000 to go, right? Because she was flying from Hawaii to Toronto, and then hotel stay, food, ordering your materials, your stock. Years ago, I remember putting together a spreadsheet that actually calculated out like what you would wind up spending to go to convention. Do you remember that? This was like
As part of the you and Mark Rudolph, I believe, did an episode of Art and Story.
With, that's right.
Called the big convention.
I don't remember for like sure, I mean, I guess I can look it up and put it in the show notes. But yeah, I put together a spreadsheet that actually calculated out like what you could give you an estimate of what a convention would cost. So like, yeah, you go to one out of town, you're going to spend a lot of money. Therefore, unless you got a lot of money, it's a little tricky to do to heuristically explore conventioning, right?
It's because, I mean, there's so many. You as an entity and you going to that convention, a lot of conventions are typically made up of a variety of sizes of businesses. And typically when you're an independent creator, you represent the smallest businesses that are part of a convention. Whereas there's businesses that are spending way more than $2,000 to be there. It'd be easy to spend 10 to $100,000 on a conventioning presence for one event.
Yeah. Have you ever sat in with one of those big booths before in any of your past occupations?
Yeah, it was funny. It's for a while I was a product manager, UX guy at this software as a service company called .com monitor.com. And it's just a fun name to say.
It ends like it begins.
Yeah. And it was an important aspect of their business to, demonstrate capabilities, generate awareness and all that by having a presence. And so, yeah, you're talking about needing to have enough booth space and then things to put in that space that then convey important messages that are compelling to interact with and whatnot. Then that's where you run into, larger conventions that, and some of their trappings and traditions that are a little bit kind of odd when you look at it with fresh eyes. Things like booth talent.
What does that mean?
Good looking folks to hang out in a booth.
is that effective? I always wondered about that. Like, you know, good-looking young people standing behind a table isn't anything that really catches my eye. Okay, let me take back. I did the Miami Book Fair years ago. I guess 2008 I went to it, and I went to, like, this after party for the authors, and I'm hanging out with all these big-name authors. Not that I was just that I was tagging along, right? I was the little fish, but it was like this really high end party, and like all the wait staff were like the best looking guys you've ever seen in your entire life. And that was like, in that scenario, that was just like the novelty. I was like, these guys all have to be models. They have to be models. When I'm talking to the authors, like, let's ask them. Let's ask one of the guys. Like, are you a model? Like, yeah. Like, oh, okay. But like at a convention, I'll walk by and I'll be like, maybe I'll make a mental note. Like, that guy is really good looking, but I never go like, and I want to talk to him because of that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a different, exactly. That's where it gets awkward and strange. And on some level, so when you think about, well, what one way to look at, well, what are conventions? So you're bringing, it is an event to draw attention via a lot of people bringing resources together and making an attraction for that event for anyone who has interests to find useful discoveries or make connections. And it's a wild and it makes sense functionally as human beings. We get together and we find stuff and that's useful, and we find people that we connect with, and we can, you know, do business together or make new friends or whatever. That all, so much about it makes a lot of sense. But functionally it's a marketing thing where you want to create more awareness and cause an action for what you're offering. And then what you're doing that to a bunch of other human beings. So what we typically have are some of the cognitive aspects that we've talked about before. We've got our lizard brain, we've got our rational brain, we've got our emotional brain. And tell you what, marketing that typically starts out with rational brain gets tuned out because it's kind of boring. If it's a beautiful person saying, "Hi, would you like a free iPad?" And, you know, they're great at doing that, way better than I just said it. And, you know, that might draw your attention. And all of a sudden, boom. And now the conversation continue to build from there. And whether that you have a huge booth and you're spending $50,000, or you have an artist alley table and you're spending $1,000 to $2,000 to travel to an event, it's you're encountering the same kind of things, and you're appealing to people with the same quirks and ways of processing and noticing things and all that.
So let's look at, let's go through some different scenarios of choice that face you, right? So like as I was breaking it down for myself, I was thinking, okay, here's the choices as they break down is, I can not go at all, stay at home, I'll figure out some other way to interact with people.
Sure.
Or I'll go and I won't table. I'm just going to go for high fives, right? I'm going to go talk with other creators, maybe meet a couple of fans out on the floor. Or I'm going to go and I'm going to table. I'm going to do the full experience, right? Not to be simplistic, but to, you know, start to, you know, narrow down some of our decision-making process. Mm-hmm. Before we dive into those scenarios, I think it's important to go into, let's look at pros of cons and cons of cons of going to a convention. Do you want to do the pros and I'll do the cons? I get to be the negative Nelly.
Yeah, sure. Sounds fun. So it's a big marketing event, and I need to get my marketing going. So this is, wow, they're setting me up to succeed. I get to just be in a place where people are ready for this kind of thing. And I don't have to make it up all on my own. I get to sort of discover and be a part of this bigger pattern, right?
Mm.
I didn't have to figure out my own event. I get to, you know, attend
it's an event where somebody else built up the magnet for you, right?
Exactly.
It's already in flux. People already coming there. You're just going to be part of the action, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's another? What else is?
Oh, what
a
else?
Good reason to go.
Let's see. It's a marketing event. I need that, and I'm and it's a great way to get plugged into it. So what else can I
I've got a subset of that, actually, now that I think about
What's
it.
What's up?
So I was telling, I front-ended this with my buddy who went to convention for the first time in a long time. He went to go meet a television personality that he has always wanted to meet, and met the person. The person turned out to be not only really, really nice, but very responsive and singling him out personally, like on Twitter, like, thanks so much for, you know, being a really cool guy. Insert your name here, you know. And my buddy was on cloud nine. He's like, this person treated me like I really, really mattered a lot. He's like, now it may have been manufactured because they're an actor after all. It's like, but I'm going to take it as they're just a really kind person who was moved by the fact that I like their stuff so much. And I said to him, I bet you if that person put out a 5-minute video and said, give me $5 for it, you'd be the first person in line with your $5. He's like, oh yeah, you bet I would. You know, so it's an opportunity for genuine human interaction, right? And that human interaction, let's face it, is part of the marketing.
Absolutely. So it's a kind of marketing that you really can't get at that scale. Just up going to your local, you know, comic shop kinds of events or whatnot. I mean, a convention is bringing a ton of people, which means way more face-to-face connections. And face-to-face, that's a really important, rich way to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
So it has advantages where you could make possibly some stronger connections face-to-face than you could if you stayed home. So it does contrast really strongly to some of your other approaches.
What about connecting with people in the field?
That's true too. So it has this critical mass of attendees and supporters and whatnot, but it also has, fellow creators and peers doing, all with similar goals, similar skills, backgrounds, experiences.
Let me ask you this: How did your ability to pitch, was it affected at all by, like, once you started tabling at shows, or did it have really no effect on it?
As soon as I got brave enough to face the people as opposed to the wall, yeah, it got better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you seem like a pretty personable guy at Kids Read Comics last year?
Yeah, thanks. My first convention I did was in 2009, and I was Baltimore Comic Con. And I met like Ken. Well, no, I met Ken Drabb actually at because I attended Webcomics Weekend before that. But but actually tabled with Ken Drabb at Baltimore Comic Con. It was kind of both of us saying, "Oh, it's going to be our first tabling experience, whatever." And for some reason, we're both yahoos enough where we're like, "Yeah, let's travel to Baltimore. We don't live anywhere near there." And but it is a cool event, and that was part of it too. It was timing and whatnot. So I don't know, maybe the size of the event, because different different events have very different venues and very different audiences and very different scales too. So it was one of those things where I was super curious about, like, well, what's one of these bigger scale comic events like? I have no idea. And then, what better way to learn than to just go try it out? And that's where I met Tyler James as well. I coincidentally sat right next to him.
So in other words, you make professional contacts by doing these things, which is, I mean, you could do that online, but, there's something about face-to-face that's really appealing to us mammals. And then also, you're doing the pitch all weekend, right? Like all
the pitch, you're totally right. Yeah, you practice that a lot. One word I want to say before I forget is commitment. To be somewhere physically involves way more commitment and investment of your resources.
Good one.
And I don't know, like, if that's just causes you to say, "Oh, I better make the most of this," or what. But it's also demonstrating, saying, I believe in this thing I'm doing.
Yep.
But yeah, the pitching with all the people coming by, I did, I had a lot of rough attempts. I'm trying to be genuine, but not overly harsh on myself. Right. I mean, I had a lot of rough attempts, and I think that's a fair way to put it.
Oh, you and me both, man.
Yeah. So what about you and your first convention experience? I mean, I know you've been really practicing it for quite a while.
Oh God, I'm still terrible at it. I'm still awful at it. But didn't I tell the story on this show? I did. I'm pretty sure I did when I went to my first convention and I walked down that line of people and I was handing out my mini comics to everybody.
And
there's like the line going out the building, and maybe it was like 200 yards long or so, 200 meters. And I had my mini comics printed out, and I started handing them out to people in the line, like, while you're waiting, here's something to read. And man, my heart was in my throat the whole time. I was 19. These are total strangers. And then I resumed my place in line, and then I listened to people behind me making fun of my work, you know. Again, looking back, I'm like, how did I even get through that weekend? Because that would kill me now.
What a good experience, though. I mean, it must have added to your, I'm trying to be positive guy, and but I guess giving you a little bit of the negative ammo, whenever you get exposed to a lot of people, you get exposed to a lot of their opinions and perspectives, and that they may not all be in harmony with yours.
I think that's a very exceedingly fair way to put it. The way I put it back then was like I took some time off from between like 1996 and 2005. Like there was like 9-year period where I didn't table at conventions at all. I didn't go to conventions. I went to like one in between because I had so many bad experiences my first couple times out, like a kid spitting on my book, looking me dead in the eye and spitting on my book and then running away. Yeah. And like the crazies, you know, like there's people there who are just weird, right? And, and it's a small percentage, but there's just weird people there who give you a hard time. And, you know, it's not like it's something where I can like say like get out, because it's somebody who's just, they're just weird and unsocialized, and this is their way to get out, you know? So I asked for it by getting a table, right?
Well, it's kind of like getting exposed to a lot of germs. I mean, you'll develop some immunity to it. But I'm curious, just circle back on your marketing approach. So you handed out a lot of flyers, essentially. Mini comics? Is that what they were? They were all mini comics?
Yeah. They were ash cans. That's what they called them back then. It was the first 14 pages of what became this, which I showed last week, right? The book I produced in 1994. Which is only here because I don't clean my office.
Because I'm thinking of like, here's a positive that the feedback you get on your marketing techniques, it's really, I'm doing a little bit of an echo of your saying, you know, hey, did you get a lot of practice doing your pitch and did you get better? Yes. And yes. But there's so many, things related to that. Like, let's say you come to table, or you're not tabling and you have something to hand out. You've got a business card, maybe you've got stickers, maybe you've got, and I've seen this kind of thing. So for you handing out that ash can, and then seeing those results, how did that affect when you pursued handing things out at another event? I mean, did you just never do it again, or did you do it differently?
I don't think I've done that again. No, I never did that again. Not because, it was such a terrible experience, but I didn't see any return on investment. There was nothing, there was no direct benefit that I received. Well, I take that back. I had one kid. I mean, I handed out maybe 200, 300 copies, and I had one kid come up to me afterwards, found me. I wasn't at a table, and he found me. He was like, are you the guy who gave these out when we were in line? I'm like, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's like, this is really fun. He's like, are you doing a real book of this? Are you doing a full book? And so the next year I tabled at the show, this kid brought his friends, and he was like a fan, right? Mm-hmm. So there was that, but the next year I started tabling at shows, and then I didn't need to do the whole handing things out anymore. So I was there at my table and people were walking by and I could offer things. And I did do that. I mean, I still do that at shows. Like, I'll have free things on the table. And if I see somebody walking by and looking, I'll say, like, hey, help yourself, which we all do. So, I don't hassle people in the aisles anymore. Because then that's another thing where I got a taste of that myself. I was like, oh, that makes me feel uncomfortable. I don't want to do that to people, which may or may not be good marketing because I'm doing a focus group of me. Right.
Yeah. But there's a lot where you can get exposed to so many approaches and you have an opportunity to try your own approaches. And that's like a wonderful.
Yeah.
Like a marketing lab of experiments that you can embark on or observe, which can then inform the things that you do next based on what you think will have an impact.
So I think that caps off the list of pros of cons is that, you know, also, you know, like refining your pitch, but also selling your book feels good, right? Like when that kid came back the next year and bought everything on my table, that felt really good. When he asked to get his picture taken with me, which I was like, why would you want to do that? It felt good, right? Mm-hmm. Having somebody say, your stuff is valuable to me feels good. You know, nothing beats, I mean, we get the emails, but nothing beats that face-to-face interaction of somebody saying that to you, right?
Absolutely.
I want to quickly blast through the list of cons that I wrote down here. Yeah. What's the downside of doing conventions? Well, the big one is if you're an introvert, it's tough. It's tough if you're introverted. You got to be
some heavy weight lifting. you're working out your emotions there.
And like for me, I mean, I love meeting new people and talking to people. And I was talking about this with Raina when I was at TCAF. She's like, you're not introverted, are you, Jersey? I'm like, what do you think? I get high on this stuff. I get excited and I get energized from talking to people. So it's like conventioning all day. It's tiring, but it's not exhausting. But if you're introverted, oh man, I can see how that would just beat the living heck out of you. Also, you know, it's like part of the reason we go to conventions is like you were talking about, Rob, is like there's this big scene that we're going to plug ourselves into. I'm going to be a part of a thing. Mm-hmm. I've been to my share of conventions, and I'm sure other people have too, where you go to the thing and you still feel like an outsider. You don't know anybody there, and we're all, I mean, even the most extroverted of us are still shy when it comes to meeting new people in a new environment. We don't know the ground rules and what the rules of that tribe are, right? So we may go home feeling like, oh, I just spent all this money and I didn't, you know, maybe I made a couple sales, met a couple fans, but I still don't feel like I'm connected to anything, right? Raise your hand in the chat room if you've ever gone to a comics event and still felt unconnected. I think that that's a pervasive thing. I think it's something that even when we are connected, we still feel disconnected, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to feel alone in a crowd and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's an old chestnut, but yeah. And you can also experience from the outside when others have developed relationships, and whether that's through collaboration or just professional respect and admiration, you can see other groups in up close, right? And then get a really more clear evidence how you're not part of that. but see, like, oh wow, that's really awesome. They're, you know,
who's ever been in a mixed group of people and then two people are saying something to each other in the mixed group, and then one of them says to the other, I'll tell you all about it later. Oh man, that's so alienating.
Yeah.
And that's a fun little bit of currency some people like to pull out to like say, like, look, we're in on this, you guys in on this. But anyway, yeah, not to drive that too far. It's just, I think it's worth highlighting that, you know, it's not as simple as just go to this thing and just shake people's hands and then suddenly everybody likes you, right? Sometimes it backfires. Sometimes it doesn't work out. Sometimes you wind up mingling with the crowd that's not compatible with your values, right? Well, that sounds severe, but...
Honestly, and you're in a role that you may not be exactly as practiced in, right? So you've been practicing your craft and your storytelling or literal craft, like you're putting things together, going to an art fair. now you're putting yourself in the position of being a marketer and a salesperson and an advocate and maybe a teacher and all sorts of things that maybe you're not as used to. Mm-hmm. And it's just a very, it's a different skill.
Yep.
And,
yeah, it totally is.
Yeah.
And then my final con is that I would say it's expensive, right? Which I already talked about, right? It can be very expensive if you go out of town. If you've got one close by, awesome. But if you have to stay in a hotel and if you got to drive more than a couple hours, it's going to, the expenses are going to add up fast.
Mm-hmm.
So which now we get to the questions to dig at this thing and pick it apart. I wrote down three questions. What value are you hoping to achieve by going to this convention? Are you getting that value elsewhere, right? Is this something where you don't have that value at all and you're hoping that the convention is the place to get it? Or is it you want to bolster value that you're already getting? We're going to explore value in a little bit of detail here, but just bear with me, everybody. And then how much is this value worth to you in dollars and time? This value goal that you're hoping to get. How much of your time and money is it worth to achieve or unlock that value, right? That sounds so suit and tie.
Yeah.
But it's not, right? I mean, like once you've done it a couple of times, you're like, well, wait a minute, maybe I better think this thing through, right?
No, it's not just because, it does sound suit and tie and maybe you have a very casual dress code for your creative efforts, but you still pay real money to do these things. And that has an effect on what you can do, what else you can do, you know, like whatever other vacations you had planned or other marketing things you wanted to do, or maybe equipment upgrades you wanted to it's expense in your business.
Yep.
Operational overhead.
So, okay, so let's explore these questions through the different scenarios then.
Mm-hmm.
Not going at all. You know, gosh, you guys have just described a lot of horrific scenarios. And talking to people, blech, phooey. I've got Tumblr, I've got Twitter, I've got DeviantArt, I've got other places where I can interact with people. I'm just not going to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you get the values that we described, right? The feeling connected to things, the professional networking, the interaction with fans there? Question. I'm pitching it to you.
Oh, you're pitching? Well, I don't think there is a direct answer for that, honestly. For as far as the value will be very individual. So you have venues that are physical, and you have that are near, that are far, and that'll have a, you know, various amounts of cost. And you have those that aren't physical, which are typically going to have a far lower cost. Which you know, essentially different social networks and different interest groups within those networks and whatnot that or presences you build on your own that mm-hmm. you work to become a recognized, source of the thing you're trying to offer, you know, a fun comic, an adventure comic, a sweet set of stickers for laptops, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The online approach is often going to be a lot less expensive. But what's funny is like it's the whole the awareness and marketing aspect of it too. There's sort of the conversational marketing aspect of the online social stuff, and then the conversational aspect of just being present at an event. But then there's the more traditional invest money to draw a lot of attention to the thing marketing, traditional marketing. And that costs a lot of money no matter if you're online or off.
I don't differentiate between time and money costs mm-hmm. when I'm talking about costs on this either, right?
Okay.
For me, time is money. As a freelancer, so any time I'm having to spend on engagement or whatever you want to call it, posting things, paying attention to people, responding to emails. Oh, responding to emails. You know, that's time that's taking away from work where I could be getting paid from somebody to draw something, right? So yes. Either way, it's there's a cost to that. You know, what's funny is I wrote down all these things like, okay, well, as I'm looking at the pros and cons of not going at all, I was like, wow, the pros list is really long and the cons list is not so long. Maybe I should just stay home because you could save money. You get to set up interactions in your own terms. You know, there's all this technology now to permit presence without having to go anywhere, like what we're doing now.
Yeah.
You know, and the you know, some people have bemoaned the fact that, oh, Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr and Google Plus and all these places are so different, but that's actually a good thing because that means there's a lot more opportunities to find the right community for your stuff kind of stuff. That's pretty cool. But yeah. It doesn't alleviate you from the whole social bit that we were talking about being at shows, right? You still have to learn social graces. I don't mean social graces like Emily Post. I mean, social graces in whatever context you feel natural. But like, how do you talk to people and behave like a human?
It's well, and to draw attention and be interesting in a way that brings a positive attention to the thing you're trying to get people to become more aware of. It's the and that approach is more of the meritocracy where you're investing your time to try to plant a few seeds where other people that are within your circle that can become aware of it, then share it and, you know, continue to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But then so that's the bottom up. That's the grassroots marketing approach, which is super valid and great. But then it's not like it's free. Right.
Yeah.
It's there is also the traditional approach too. Like, well, I mean, I've used ads before to draw attention, like when I've had a major release of Guitar Fretter or when I you know, had a new story arc on my comic and I had the book that was just released and all that. Yeah, those are good events to draw attention to the thing you're trying to, you know, engage in trade and get people to buy. But anyway, but yeah, they just cost different things. In both work also.
Yeah. Darth Furby's in the chat and he or she got one step ahead of me, mm-hmm. and mentioned go on podcasts to promote yourself from the comfort of your own home. I would also throw in there is that, you know, this is another thing, like this present stuff, like every cartoonist I think should be considering making a podcast for themselves. And if somebody says, oh, it's saturated. Oh, well, you know, there's a lot of web pages. I guess that's saturated. I guess we shouldn't make web pages anymore. Because...
a lot of comics, a lot of bands, a lot of whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
It is daunting. I get it. It makes
it
sense.
Is.
You know, where how can you add your voice to that? Ask me that after you've done it, and then let's have a different conversation.
There's 6 billion people on the planet. Well, I guess there's enough people.
Yeah, totally.
You don't need any more people. I guess I'll unplug, you know, because there's a lot of people. So what am I doing here? Oh, yeah, Darth Furby is a he. Okay.
Oh, cool. So,
but yeah, podcasting, there's a lot more compelling reasons to stay home now than there used to be, right? So that's a viable option, and it's one that shouldn't be overlooked, I think. But I mean, I think we've kind of shown that whether you stay home, whether you go, it's still on you to figure out how do I get my thing to them? How do I get my stuff in a place where people can find it?
And, well, you're still talking about two things resources you are trying to grow in either way. You're trying to grow awareness and relationships,
mm-hmm.
and yeah. trade, right?
Yep. Interacting with the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm intentionally trying to be vague here just to get around the whole, like, you know, trade means a lot of things, right?
True.
Trade does not necessarily mean that I'm handing a dollar bill to Rob and he is accepting it and he is giving me a thing. Mm-hmm. Trade means a lot of different stuff.
I'll give you a CD-ROM.
The future of books.
Mm-hmm.
Scenario two. I'll go, but I'm just going to be a spectator. I'm going to go, and I'm going to knock at a table. I'm going to interact from the floor, right? And that this is pretty awesome because I just did this when I was at TCAF, and I didn't get to really do a TCAF report. That's funny. It's been a really wild month. But you know the great thing about going to TCAF and not having a table was I didn't have to think about merchandise. I didn't have to think about getting books printed. I didn't have to think about how much, you know, carrying all that luggage. All I had to do was pack enough clothes for the weekend, grab a couple mini comics that I might want to trade with some people, get in my car and go. And then you know what else was great about that? Is I got to go like high five all my friends, like, hey, Dave Roman, high five. Hey, Audrey Ferrucci, high five. And then it was like, oh, you know what? It's getting really crowded in here. I think I'm going to go outside and I'm going to go to a restaurant and I'm going to have a beer and I'm
going to
sit there.
I'm going to exit the venue. There's a long line for the restroom. I don't have to wait here.
I don't have to wait here. Yeah. I actually, Ann and I went out. We got hot sake, which was awesome. It was so good. It was so great just to get a break from the hubbub of the convention, and then be like, all right, you feeling like you're aired out a little bit? All right, let's go back in. Let's go back in, and we'll take it on again. That was fantastic. And I still got to go to the after parties and hang out with people and talk with all these great cartoonists who I admire, but I didn't have to go through any of that stress of having to stand behind a table, and people walk by, and I go, hi, and they go, ugh, and then they walk away. Or, hi, oh, hey, what's going on here? What's this book about? Oh, this is the front. It's a book of this Harry Potter book with superheroes. You know, I don't have to go through that over and over again. I just get to, if I don't feel like talking, don't got to talk. And guess what? It was cheap, or cheap-ish. It wasn't cheap to drive 4 hours and stay in a hotel for a night, but it was less expensive than if we had tabled, right?
Totally. There's a lot of big events that what are they? It's a little bit of the unconference thing. It's the what are they? A shadow conference. I mean, there's all sorts of things that are like secondary aspects of like a whole bunch of people with a common interest are in town. Many of them are going to this major event, but then that often brings about people out. Side of the event too. It's not like they're in that event the whole time for one thing, that crowd in particular, but then you can mingle with that other crowd as well. And still and achieve similar benefits. I feel like that's a little bit of a how to travel on the cheap, hop a train, but, I don't mean it as that. I think
be a hobo.
Right.
Tie your clothes in a bindle.
Yep. Vagabond. Yep. The big event isn't the only way. All of the mechanisms provided by the big event aren't the only way to benefit from that event. And I do think that's legitimate because one size doesn't fit all. Some events sell out. Like there's a conference that what's funny is I didn't initially expect to have this week off, but the thing sold out anyway. It's a local. It's in Minneapolis and it's for essentially visual design, creative coding, and all sorts of really cool stuff that it's called IO Festival. And it grew out of this Flash Belt Festival thing, and that was a wonderful event. Anyway, but not that I planned to do it, but I thought, like, hey, I could totally do that because there's this local event, and I should go socialize with some of these awesome folks that are in town. But that's kind of a bad example because I'm not doing it. But I thought of it.
But you're putting it out there as an option. And actually, you know what? It makes it when you just if you're just going to be a spectator or, you know, just like a guest. No, what is the word for it? Attendee, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's easier to, at least for me, I can only speak for myself, but it's easier for me to be able to actually make that FaceTime with all the different people that I want to strike up a conversation with because they're stationary. I can find them on a map, and I can just go, oh, I always wanted to talk to that guy. I'm going to go and spend a few minutes at the table. And I've got, if you're introverted or if you're a little bit socially awkward, you've got an out, because it's actually bad manners to stand in front of that table for too long because you're blocking potential sales. Mm. So you can have a nice short conversation. You make that FaceTime, you shake their hand, you say, thank you so much for all the things that you do. Your stuff is awesome. Here's three things that I think that you do well that nobody else does, which I think is a terrific strategy for striking up a conversation with somebody. And then you get the heck out of there, right? So... this is something that I plan on doing more of as I go to, like, SPX. I'm going to be at SPX this year, and I'm not tabling.
You know? Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah, I'm just going for the fun of it, all the same reasons, all the benefits I derived from TCAF, like just being able to have a lot more freedom and latitude, mm-hmm. but still be part of the big thing, you know? Cons of doing it that way? Well, you don't get to sell your stuff to fans, although... I publicized the fact that I was going to be at TCAF, and I ran into some people who are supporters of my stuff. I don't like the word fan anyway, but they're part of my constituency, I guess, right? People who pay attention to stuff that I post in places and enjoy it. And I got to meet them face to face, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it might be depending.
Audience. How about audience?
What do you mean audience?
Audience. Oh, part of your audience.
Yeah, there we go. So... people from my audience, I got to run into a couple of them, which was super, super cool. But it might be harder. Another con is that it might be harder to do the networking thing, right, to the professional networking thing, because sometimes these events have after parties that are just for tabling artists or something, and that might be a little more. You could try to piggyback your way in, but, you know. And also, if, like, you're just meeting them for the first time, like, different people, it's like, are you really going to say to them, like, hey, what are you doing for dinner? Right? might be trickier, but, you know, that's why you try to strike up a relationship, some kind of beginning relationship with them online or something first, so that at least they're aware of who you are. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we covered that one. So then the final one is I'll go and table, which we kind of covered at the top, is that there's, you know, marketing, refining your pitch. What else did we talk about in that one? Opportunities to refine your pitch, and then selling your book to happy reader, and then you threw in commitment, demonstrating commitment.
Yeah, I do think that it's even, you know, commitment to yourself, where you're like, no, I'm really taking my business seriously, and that can lead to some pretty bad investments. Like, so it's good to, like, evaluate that from other perspectives to say, well, how much is this ritual of commitment worth? Right. So you did, you know, bringing up the value, it's, you probably can't put an actual monetary value on it, but you can contrast it to other monetary values that, like, at some point your gut will tell you that's too much or that sounds okay.
Yeah.
You know, is it worth the cost of a video game system to do this? I don't know. Is it worth the cost of a reliable transportation for a year? What's it worth? And then you can compare it. If it has a number, other things have numbers too, and you're going to be able to find at least a gut feel for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where local events have a huge upper hand. And
that's what I did when I was first starting out. Like, when we talk about those days when I was a teenager, I mean, I was living in Central Michigan, and I was driving, 2.5 hours to Detroit for a weekend, you know, and I was staying in a hotel maybe one or two nights, and it was like, I would stay in, like, cheap, cruddy hotels, like, I don't know what it was back then. This was like 20 years ago, so I don't know, like 50, 40 bucks a night kind of thing. Actually, I think, like, Motel 6s were like $30 back then.
Mm.
So you're looking at 60 bucks out of pocket for hotel, maybe, I think gas is like $1.11 a gallon back then, somewhere in the neighborhood.
Do you remember
those days? Back before we knew that this stuff was scarce and was ultimately destroying the world, it was just cheap and free.
No, we knew it. I assumed it would be gone by now, but yeah.
You thought it was going to be Road Warrior by 2013?
Yeah.
But anyway, at the Motor City Comic Con that I used to go to, back then Artist Alley was free, so there was no table cost. So it was a lot cheaper back then, and that was where I got to do a lot of experimentation and figuring out how to be present at the table and all that stuff. But the thing I didn't do back then is I didn't think about what I was ultimately trying to gain from it. I discovered those values by going. I heuristically figured it out, and thank goodness it was cheap. But now when I'm looking at shows, and this is a mistake I've made in the past, in the recent past, like only a few years back, I would go to shows where I was a bad fit for that show. And this is where I want to come in with a little bit of point of view as a person who organizes a show, you know? And as a guy who organizes a show that's aimed at a very specific audience, right? The convention is called Kids Read Comics Celebration. And we don't even call it a convention, we call it Kids Read Comics Celebration. That means that not everybody is a good fit for our artist alley, right? And the tables are free. I make a big fuss about that. The tables are free. There's no admission cost to get in. Big celebration of comics. Well, here's a guy who's got, you know, the new He-Man comic with the Sorceress being decapitated and the wrestling scene with Adam and Teela where they're all oily. And, you know, is that necessarily going to be good for a 10-year-old? I don't know. Some parents may have a problem with that, you know, but it's walking a line. Or you get the guy who's like, what do we got to do to get you into this comic? As you're walking by, I'm going to shout at you and I'm going to put the comic in your hand and just look at it. Just look at it. Is that the kind of person I want at my event to expose the children? I am making fun a little bit.
I've not been that guy. I've made many mistakes. But just personality wise, I've not landed on that one yet. Just take the comic.
Or you're somebody who just has like uses a lot of language, right? And I'm not going to make a judgment call on that at all, because believe it or not, I really don't have a problem with people swearing a lot. I don't like to do it, but if other people, if that's the way they express themselves, guess what? We live in a free country. We get to do that. Freedom of speech. Pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. But is Andrew Dice Clay necessarily a good fit for an event that's aimed at 10-year-old kids, right? This is something that I have to navigate as one of the co-organizers of this thing, and it's something that we have some really serious discussions about when we're looking at applicants for tables, and like, is this person a good fit? And we evaluate on, and this is just me sharing the convention organizer's side of the story for mm-hmm. anybody who's ever tabled at it shows. I actually have a rubric that I use to, you know, jury these things. Are they somebody that kids would want to meet, right? That's a pretty big criteria. Are they a draw for kids? Somebody whose work is widely known by children or is popular amongst kids or whatever? Or is it something that kids would really positively respond to? Are they engaging? Are they engaging with that audience? Are they somebody who you put them in a room with kids and they know how to keep the kids' attention and, you know, entertain them and inspire them and educate them, right? Are they good with young people? And then, you know, it's like, well, and then what's their general attitude? Are they coming to this thing going, what do you got for me? How do I make money at your show, right? I didn't sell very many books. That's your fault, Jersey. Ooh, you know, we work really hard on the show for nothing, and I don't need that headache in my life. So if you're going to come at me with that attitude, guess what? You're going to the bottom of the list, right? And I don't feel bad about that. So
you're pointing out something that I think is really interesting is the that fit goes all the way throughout the whole darn ecosystem, I guess, where essentially you have you've got the venue and you've got the event and you've got the audience that event appeals to, and then you've got a lot of the different vendors and services and stuff that's set up within there, and you've got the different I suppose you're a vendor. When you're an artist at an event and you're selling stuff, you're a vendor of some sort. Yeah. And
I don't think every convention necessarily does that kind of jurying, right?
True. Or that kind of but there is a system there going on, like, and you can still think about that, like whether they're jurying, and you could be jurying yourself.
Yep.
And saying, well, I don't know. Like this art fair, maybe not, but this other art fair still is like they're kind of entitled similar events. This one looks like it would be perfect for, you know, the indie comics I work on or whatever. That fit because, well, again, what are you trying to do? You're trying to reach people. You're trying to, you know, grow an awareness. And It's not a bad experience, hopefully, if it doesn't cost you too much money. When you do table at an event that you aren't a fit at, you'll get good lessons.
Oh, yeah. Expensive lessons, but effective lessons, because, yeah, I haven't made that mistake again.
Yeah. And I don't know, not all of that. I mean, and if you're running a small business, you're going to make those kind of mistakes. And yeah. I think if you're... In a way, you're looking at an investment question and a risk management question and marketing all at the same time. Like, so how do I, what kind of return will I get on this investment of, you know, my time and money to be at this event? And that's going to come with, well, I think I could engage in a lot of trade because I have a product ready, right? Or, you know what, I don't have a product ready for this event, but I will for that other one. So the whole balance of how of you know, the money aspect of the decision can totally shift just with one change in your business, where it's like, I don't have a product, now I do have a product.
Yep.
And I actually think it's really fit for this audience. So yeah, I need to invest in that.
You're getting to some of the on the ground stuff that I want to talk about in a second, but I want to wrap up with the 10,000 feet up stuff with, yeah, cool. I think the big topic. The big question to put at the end of this thing is, when you're deciding what shows to go to, you have to decide what shows to go to. And mistakes that I've made in the past is like going by the numbers, right? It's like, well, this show has 10,000 people at it, or 20,000, 30,000 people at it. I'm going to do well if I go to that thing. And then I go to that thing and I'm like, oh, everybody's here to meet Patrick Stewart, which is a good reason to go to a show. He's a nice man. We've all seen that video of him hugging that gal. Awesome video. I teared up. But if you got Patrick Stewart sitting here, Jersey Joe's sitting here with his mini comic, Jersey Joe's is going home sad because nobody came to say hi to him because somebody way cooler is sitting right there, right? And he appeals to a completely different audience than what I'm trying to reach, right? So something that I learned in the last 10 years is, yeah, look for the shows where my audience is, or where people. Let me put it this way. I want to stay abstract. Is I look at the audiences of the different shows, and if I don't know for sure what the audience is, you can infer it by looking at the website of the show, right?
Sure.
When you go to Wizard World Philadelphia's website, look at who's being promoted and headlined there. Are they people who are similar to you? Right?
And digging a little deeper, you could also look at, well, what are their goals? And do you share any of these in a way that you think that could play out well? And the other thing is where the scale of the event, and this may be a little bit too on the ground, but like 10,000 people, like for a one day event, for instance, it's so useful to know that, like, well, how well attended is this thing? Like, for instance, like, I did very well at a local convention, called Convergence, which, a couple of years back, I'll be missing it this year, but, I hope to be back to that again. And it's got a respectable attendance, but it's not, the numbers aren't, you know, Wizard World kind of numbers, right? It just was a really good fit for, you know, for audience and whatnot. And when those numbers alone, like a lot, the thinking of the venue too, where it's like, God, that's a lot of people to be in that place.
Yep.
I going to be even visible when people are standing shoulder to shoulder? And I don't have a banner that reaches 20 feet into the air or whatever.
Right. No, that was something I ran into at TCAF too, was that it was so crowded, which created a nice high energy, but it made it really hard. And Audra reported on this in the, which we'll link to in the show notes, the TCAF report that she did. And she said, you know, if you're going there to meet your fans, it's a good show. If you're going there to find new fans, know if you should do it, because it was so hard to browse because it was so crowded. And Darth Furby in the chat is throwing in, I'd take that seat next to Patrick Stewart, because while they're waiting in line, they'll look at your table like the magazine rack at the checkout line in the grocery store and buy stuff. actually, in my experience, that's not necessarily so. I was at Mocha in 2005, and Chris Ware decided to do a signing down at the end of the aisle where I was. And so this huge line forms, this huge line to get something autographed by him, completely blocking the front of my table. Chris Ware fans, right? We're both comics, so of course they're going to look at my table. They looked at my table. And nobody bought a thing because they were all waiting to meet Chris Ware, and his stuff is so different than mine. Here I am with Silver and the Periodic Forces. It's about a lizard who has a magic glove that can summon warriors representing each of the chemical elements. Meanwhile, people are waiting to get their copy of Death Ray or Ghost World signed by Chris Ware, right? So not my audience. So it's possible that you could use it in that way of the grocery store aisle, the impulse buy, but in my experience, I haven't seen like a lot of victories in that regard, especially if there's a mismatch in who that audience is, right? And that's what I was trying to say about the Patrick Stewart thing. It's like, yeah, it's a lot of people waiting in line, but they're waiting in line to talk to Patrick Stewart. They're not waiting in line to have somebody like look at them and go like, hey, you want to look at my book? So, but Darth Furby also threw in the chat, and I wanted to respond to this. I wouldn't do conventions without establishing a large enough online audience base. Otherwise, I feel like it's a waste of money. And that's pretty much what Audra was talking about. It's related to what Audra was talking about, mm-hmm. right? This idea that some shows are about, you can leverage them to find new audiences, but big shows, as they get bigger and bigger and more crowded, it was so hard to browse. It was so hard to browse. And I, as somebody who tries to respect other people's personal space, was feeling like this the whole time, you know, all crunched up and, you know, being really apologetic about not spending too much time at people's tables because I wanted to give everybody a chance, and everybody else was doing the same thing. So, anyway, yeah.
They go hand in hand. So again, like if you're investing in the, you know, developing the relationships and the awareness, yeah, one can and should inform the other. Thinking about what product you're going to bring and emphasize, or even starting to engage with the local audience before you're even in the vicinity.
And this stuff is incredibly complicated. You know, I remember a couple years back really extolling the virtues of the Detroit Urban Craft Fair and craft fairs in general because I make more money at those shows. Like I go to the Detroit Urban Craft Fair, I make double what I make at a traditional comic show, triple even sometimes. But then the next question is, what did I sell? Did I make fans? Or did I just get novelty buys, right? So what did I sell? At the Detroit Urban Craft Fair, my hottest item was my crayon sketches, drawings of Webster from the TV sitcom series, right, in crayon, drawings of Alf, drawings of Miss Piggy. I sold those like hotcakes for $5 a pop and made them just really fast crayon drawings. And I wound up making like a lot more money at that show than I did at other shows. Now, I put my URL on there. Did I make fans out of that? I don't think so. I didn't see any kind of like long-term gains out of that. Like people like emailing me, I met you at the Detroit Urban Craft Fair. I want to buy your graphic novel now, you know? Thanks for that drawing of Miss Piggy, by the way, right? So it's complicated. Like, is it just about making money or are there other values that you're trying to achieve as well?
What is your business set up to do? Like, so there's... so you're mentioning a strategy where you essentially had you're selling a product, but it's more of it's a service, it's a commission, you know, based on nostalgia thing. And, that's a separate service than I'm a storyteller and I've got these package stories that are, you know, really entertaining for the different kind of groups and interests. So, that's one aspect of your business that you could try to, you know, cross-pollinate or, you could be just having another revenue stream to say, I need multiple revenue streams to help, you know, bolster my business.
Yep.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's not mutually exclusive, but sometimes we can get these things, tangled up and think, one isn't automatically going to feed the other, but the benefits you're getting from it. You're growing awareness that you have these skills to do these things. And so you could be getting like that conversion funnel probably goes to like larger scale services. Oh, okay. You want me to do a bigger drawing. You want me to do a more complex drawing. And yeah.
That's... Yeah, actually, when we talk about Tyler in a little bit, he has a really great system for that, which we'll hint at in a little bit. But
yep.
I want to get to on the ground in a second. But the big idea that I thought that we should, you know, end cap this 10,000 foot up stuff is that I think, at least I forgot a lot that different shows have different cultures and different expectations. And after learning that and being more aware of it, it's made it a lot easier for me to figure out what shows I want to go to, which ones I don't. So Motor City Comic Con still goes on every year here in Michigan. I'm 40 minutes away from it. There's nothing stopping me from going, but I don't go. Why? Oh, is it a terrible show? Do you hate the people? No, I got nothing against that show or the people who run it. It's just the culture there is not the culture that my work speaks to. There's no benefit to me going to that thing outside of seeing some of my fellow local cartoonists high-fiving them, right? You know, which I see those guys on a regular basis anyway at local events in Ann Arbor. So, you know, there's no reason for me to pay $40 for a weekend, $50 for a weekend to go to that thing. And that's a close by one, right? Mm-hmm. But I know now because I can look at, you know, a lot of, I can infer a lot of things, and I can also do a lot of research on it to evaluate what the different cultures are. And I think that's something that we should be more aware of when we're deciding on conventions. What's the culture?
Totally. And as you said, like, yeah, checking out the website is an awesome idea. If you're... Some of this stuff, too, like, you can be gathering this, some of this stuff over time. Like, you don't have... Maybe you know you aren't going to go to a certain event, but you're very curious about it. If there's hashtags or something on Twitter, you can just kind of just watch the conversation and see what it's, you know, see some of that other, like the social conversation and what's happening, and get a feel.
So anything else before we jump into on the ground?
No, let's go.
All right. Let's march. Boots on the ground. Okay, so this part, this should go pretty quick. I just wrote down for my own part, it was like just, you know, a rubric that I use to evaluate what shows to go to for me. You know, when somebody tells me about a different convention or a different show, a different art fair or whatever, I look at, you know, in this order, distance and cost. How much is it going to cost me for the weekend for expenses? How far away is it? Networking potential is number two. You know, like, who's going to be there? Are they people who I want to meet? When I say networking, let me be careful here. I'm not just talking about crass, I'm giving you my business card, we shook hands, now we can go into business together. I'm talking about networking as in being friendly with my peers, right? There are people in our industry, in visual storytelling industry, who I just think do neat stuff. And I read what they write, and they write neat things, and I just want to go up and tell them how neat I think they are. Mm-hmm. That can lead to things, but that's not the primary motivation. Does that make sense? I don't want to be reductive, though. I don't want to turn this into, like, we're just buds. I hate that stuff, that, like, even more than the crass networking. Because it's not about, like, clicking my beer with them and being like, bros forever. But it's... Yeah. It's
well, motivation matters, right? I mean, so why are you connecting with other people? Why are they seeking your connection and whatnot? And yeah. And it's... Anyway, it's... I think it's safe to say that when you meet people that you're on a similar page with, that leads to something good. And it's great to connect with other people. Yeah. Networking gets a bad rap, especially with, I'm just going to mention I think I've mentioned it on the podcast way too many times probably, but the book by Daniel H. Pink, To Sell as Human. Yeah. I know I've mentioned, actually, it's funny, is I've mentioned that on the Extra Lean podcast, I think, even more.
Yeah, actually.
But it really, so that, for instance, takes a perspective on the whole... the culture and habits around selling, and to say, and it characterizes it as, well, you know, it's actually pretty, you know, there's a lot of very natural aspects to it that are important for just healthy individual and social human existence, and they, you know, delves into it from a bunch of interesting angles. Some of it delves into to sales techniques and whatever, but like, much like sales techniques, you have networking that can be whatever. We just have a lot of loud negative examples of that.
We do. Being crass. Yeah, for some reason, well, for some uncaring. Good reasons. Yes. Uncaring, yes. Whereas, like, no, like, I come at it from the He-Man standpoint of, like, I just want to help people. Yeah. And I want to be, and I want to associate myself with people who want to be helpful too, right? Which does have a real physical benefit to me, but also it's aligning myself with like-minded people, right? So that's what I mean by networks.
Pick an example here. I know it's come up on the podcast before, but like, and so it's so funny because it's based out of like, I should have planned a lot more for Baltimore Comic Con 2009. But I didn't, but like things came out of that, like relationships with, you know, well, I was already, you know, friends with, Ken Drabb, but I got to connect with Tyler James. What an interesting individual that like, I didn't presuppose that this was going to happen. Like, oh, we're so totally on the same wavelength, but, yeah, I was open to networking, and obviously he was too. And he hit a button that obviously is some deep psychological button for me with, you know, he was like, I'm thinking of doing this art challenge, 30 characters in 30 days. I'm like, that's awesome. Wait a minute.
Is it difficult? Is it probably not a good idea?
Yeah. And so there you go. There's a connection where you find, oh, we have similar interests, motivations, and all that. And there's an example of that.
Mm-hmm. And then continue down my rubric, opportunities for fun times with friends, people that I can't see face-to-face normally. Mm-hmm. And then marketing potential. Now, marketing potential is lower on my rubric, but this changes. Right now, I don't have a new book to promote. When I have a new book to promote, that final point, marketing potential, boom, that becomes a lot more important. And I think depending on where you are in your publishing life, whether you're self-publishing or whether you're being published, these rubrics can change. This doesn't have to be a hard and fast coat of arms thing. I mean, even a coat of arms doesn't have to be a hard and fast thing. But and this rubric goes for whether I'm attending a show or tabling at a show. You know, it mm-hmm. goes both ways. But that's where I am right now. Is distance cost is my first priority, right? You want to come to this thing, Jersey? There's this great thing in Austin. Oh, geez, I can't afford to go to Austin. Sorry. But there's going to be these really important people in publishing who are interested in meeting you. Oh, well, now I'm going to reevaluate that cost, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway. Any on-the-ground stuff that you wanted to throw in there on this tabling thing?
There's a little bit of complexity because each of these things depends on what you invest in it ahead of time that can change its value later. So like the networking potential right at this moment, like, I don't know, I'll pick a convention, Emerald City, something, right? Sounds like a wonderful event. Never been there. Got no reason to go there right now due to all these other, like the distance cost and networking potential and whatnot. But if all of a sudden some factor changes, or if I work to change one of these factors, now it's different, right? So now like I start some connections with people of common interests through the internet, find out that they're in the area, and then all of a sudden, man, maybe this might make sense to travel there. Right. Anyway, yeah, it's just all these, each one of these, distance cost, networking potential, opportunities for fun times with friends, marketing potential. Yeah, you can affect all of these and say, well, this one's really close, but, you know, it would be a done deal if I knew I had a way to reduce the cost. So.
Yep. You know. Yeah, if Motor City offered me a free table, then I'd be like, maybe I'll do it.
There you go.
Right? Because now you've just eliminated $200 out of the equation. Now I'm looking at just the time cost. Do I want to spend a whole weekend doing that? Right? What else do I got on my plate?
So it's not static. That's what's exactly.
Yes.
It's
very... These are all Yes, these things are quantum things. You can't measure their speed and position at the same time. What was that called?
It's the Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
Yes.
And it has to deal with that light is both a particle and a wave.
And a wave.
And so that when you try to measure the particle, the position and speed of a light particle, you affect the trajectory of the light particle and whatever. Anyway, so
yeah,
that's it in a
general. But yeah, that's how these are all living, breathing things that, yeah, when you nudge any one of them. Indeed. Yeah. And yeah, the priorities can change all the time. Like, for instance, you know, it's like if I know that a large number of people who I admire and respect and get along with are going to all be at one convention, the cost issue becomes a lot less important because that becomes a more tantalizing thing. Like, oh, wow, getting to hang out with all those people at one time? That'd be terrific. All right, I'll think about it. That sounds like fun.
Or, for instance, if you can convince your wife that, yeah, going to Baltimore, that's like a family vacation. Let's go there. And so now we've effectively reduced the cost because we're having this vacation benefit too.
Yeah, that's true. Except for the fact that Daddy now has to spend 8 hours at the table while Mom and Kaya are out doing the vacation stuff during the day.
Exactly. Yes, indeed. So, but if it works for you.
Yeah. Well, I think we walked around that one pretty good, Rob.
Yeah, I think we did. I think it's suitably ambiguous at the end. And I mean that in a good way, because this is the secret recipe of like how is your business constructed, right? This is a business thing for the most part, because if it's not a business thing, I'm not sure why you would table.
Well, I've heard some people say like they do it, they treat it as it's camp comics. I'm doing it for the pure fun of it. And the tabling is like sort of like a way to try to recoup some of the costs. Maybe.
Yeah.
I'll buy that story to an extent. But odds are that if you're putting time and energy into making books, you want them sold.
Exactly.
If it truly doesn't matter, you just give them away.
There you go. And so what do you, yep, exactly. That does get down into probably a bigger topic, but when you're assigning that monetary value to it, it takes a different meaning.
Yep.
So, yeah, this is all just food for thought for going through that kind of, you know, big business decision.
And it's one that I think that, yeah, like there's a lot of different, we already did. We walked around it. We talked about all the different kind of like different facets mm-hmm. and complexities of the thing. And if folks want us to expound more on it, they can send us an email at leanintoart@gmail.com or use the form on the Lean Into Art website to contact us, because then you can let us know if there's a field to check to say, I give you guys permission to read this on the air if you want us to respond to it on a future show. Mm-hmm. But I want to throw this in there. Is that we have a resource, another like one last on the ground thing, is that we mentioned Tyler James. Tyler James is a guy who thinks really, really hard about this conventioning stuff. And he did a workshop for us called Tyler James's Absolute Consense, which is $65. And it's at leanintoart.com/workshops. And I'm gonna justify the $65 here. Given that a convention costs as much as $2,000 to go to, $65 for a truly useful resource on preparing for conventions, that's a drop in the bucket. And I can tell you that his workshop, I derived a ton of benefit out of it in the sense of feeling assured that I was prepared for a show, which is huge, right? Because going to a show is, you know, anxiety-inducing enough. I'm going to have to socialize. I'm going to have to, you know, put on my best face. Do I have all my clothes? Do I have all my books and everything? And then you get there. But to be able to feel like, okay, everything I need for any eventuality is set. That's one of the things he gives you in there, is he gives you, like, the con box preparation. Mm-hmm. Which, when I was at ALA last year, I wound up getting networking benefits out of, because a bunch of other artists didn't have the Tyler James con box. Like, I need help setting up my display. Does anybody have this? Does anybody have this? Does anybody got these kind of binder clips? Anybody got these kind of this kind of tape? And I had it all in there. And I was like, oh yeah, I got it right here. And I was Mr. Helpful.
Which he called that. in his class, he says.
He did.
Yep.
And he was right.
Benefit. Yep.
And so, like, and some people were people who I wanted to connect with but had never had a conversation with. And then I got to be the guy who's like, oh, here. And they're like, oh, thanks so much. You saved my bacon. Now I've got an in to start a conversation with the person. But also in there, he talks about different kinds of strategies for tabling at different places, different ways he's used, like, pre-sales, you know, sketch commission pre-sales, different kinds of sketch commissions. Mm-hmm. He explores a lot of really interesting ways to monetize your experience at a convention besides just putting the book on there. So, you know, they say that the best resources that you sell, like, you can't sell anything unless it makes somebody else money. Have you heard that little thing get thrown around? Like, you can't sell me something unless I'm going to make money out of using it somehow.
Sure. Maybe. Especially in a business context, I would say, right? Yeah. I mean, you can't, especially a small business person, it's like, well, no, I don't need that thing. I'll get by mm-hmm. without it. This is clearly a resource that, it'll likely save you money and help you at least find ways to plan how you're going to make.
Yeah.
Make more money.
Yep.
And I feel odd saying that. We're not like talking about get rich quick schemes or whatnot. It's just super practical and very tested and very, very well explained. Tyler does an awesome job teaching this class.
He does.
And living it.
Yeah, actually. So yeah, that's at leanintoart.com/workshops. And just to throw in on the end, you know, every purchase of a workshop comes with 12 hours of bonus content. Of a ton of extra workshops with me and Rob. So if you want 12 hours more of me and Rob, well, there you go. That's a way to get it. But then I would also throw on the end is that, you know, go to sign up for our newsletter and you can get the extra leans as well, the extra lean show that we do in between the live streams where you get a more candid look at our work week and our reflections on it. So, Rob, thanks for this talk. This was fun.
It was awesome, Jersey. Yeah, thank you. Any parting thoughts as far as your adventures at TCAF? I mean, I feel like maybe we got an extra lean in there, right? But that's part of the adventure. But like, gosh.
Well, I'll say that you have to download extra lean in order to find out what my reflections were on TCAF. Did I talk about my TCAF?
Because part of this whole episode came out of that. Really, I mean,
it did. Yeah. Parting thought, Darth Furby in the chat is saying more cons than pros to cons for most small pressers. Maybe, but it depends. It depends on the venue and the show. You know, like if it's a show that's within a short drive, if it's a 15-minute drive, you don't have to stay at a hotel. If the tables are free, then what do you got to lose except a weekend, right? And that could be good training.
Exactly. So it's the training benefits alone can be huge.
Very huge. I would rather get sneered at for a bad pitch at a show where I paid next to nothing to go to than at one that I paid $1,000 to go to, right?
Exactly. So,
yeah. But anyway, yeah, it depends on your view. The only thing I would say is I'm not going to tell anybody whether or not they should go to a convention. I would just say that whatever you decide, look at all the different facets of it and mm-hmm. make an informed decision rather than, oh, I just don't want to go, or, oh, I want to go. Well, why do you want to go? I don't know, because it sounds like cool.
Exactly. Just having that. So one of the putting a business hat on when doing this, it can just be beneficial across the board for even like seemingly small choices you make about how you convention. So. Yeah. Things to hand out, things to not, and then you think, well, did I get an impact off of that? How will I know? Well, I better change this so I can detect that someone used a different URL, whatever. It's thinking that through and finding ways to detect, am I increasing my relationships? Am I increasing the trade? And did this thing I'm doing or other choices I made about like the products I brought here, what's affecting these different results? And
And Shadowing Tronics is throwing in at the end, I found plenty of new comics, web and print, thanks to visiting conventions. Mm-hmm. You made some friends. Yeah, I mean that's another benefit of it as well, right? It's hard to make friends if you don't get out and actually talk to people.
They have that effect, you know.
So we'll have to save some of our reflections on this for another time because we're running out of time here.
Totally, yeah. I know we're totally running long. I just wanted to give a little bit of a, at least a nod. And yeah, because it really seems like I can't wait to chat with you more about that. And so I'm totally pumping it up and teasing it a bit too.
Well, and I'll have more to say about this after Kids Read Comics, you know, because I'm going to go through this June. Hey, kidsreadcomics.org, everybody, June 22nd and 23rd. Actually, 21st, 22nd, 23rd in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The 21st, we're going to have a drink and draw the night before the show begins. Show starts on Saturday. Got 50 artists coming to this thing. The guest list is finished. I'm posting the programming in the next 24 to 48 hours. Every hour, there's a different free comics workshop for kids and adults, and then there's an artist alley at the library, the Ann Arbor District Library. I will have reflections after that. We can talk more about this topic if folks want it. So.
Super cool. And the Kids Read Comics is an amazing event.
Thanks. I feel weird saying it because I put the show on, but I think it's the best comics festival in the Midwest.
I think you're right, man. It's especially, yeah, given the, yeah, because it's kids and teens still, right? I mean, So totally. It's amazing. Yeah, all the different, the workshops, the events, the people that go there to table.
Yeah.
It's tons of reasons to go.
It's a fun time. A fun time. And I don't think there's a single mean person at the show. That's another thing I like about it.
No, nope. That's one of the rubrics, right? It's part of the rubric, right?
That is part of my decision-making process, right? Is this person going to be a jerk?
Yep.
And that doesn't violate my rule of what would He-Man do, by the way. Because he says if your friends continue to make mistakes, you should ask yourself whether or not you should continue being their friend at all. So, haha. I'm going to be nice to everybody.
Awesome. All right.
He does call Skeletor names after all. So anyway, okay. I'm going to stop being weird about He-Man. So, this show is live every 2 weeks on Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Google Plus. And you can find more of all of the show notes and everything at leanintoart.com. Mm-hmm. And thank you to Shadowwing Tronics and Darth Furby for hanging out in the chat with us tonight. And until next time, everybody, I have been Jersey Drozd of leanintoart.com and Jersey on Twitter.
And I have been Rob Stenzinger of leanintoart.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.